Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I am Lady Bane, and I am the only one that saved my life through music. When you're at a point in your life where you feel like there's nothing else to give, give whatever you can, fight however you can, because you're still here for a reason. And sometimes it takes tragedy to lead you to triumph. Just don't give up. Rely on whatever you have inside of you and keep pushing.
Picture this: a Black woman dreams of serving underserved communities and grows up to become one of Detroit, Michigan's finest, a policewoman. When Cassandra Lady Bane, former Detroit police officer and internationally acclaimed singer, put on her Detroit PD uniform and served with her fellow officers, she knew that she had found her purpose and was proud to serve and protect in the community where she and her family lived. But what would you do if a crash left you unable to walk without aid, and consequently cause you to be retired, not only from the force, but also from the life that you held so dear? Would you let depression consume you and become a recluse? Or would you find a new purpose, one that would lift the world up in song? Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they too had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. Happy New Year, honey.
Honey, we made it to 2021.
Finally.
Yeah. Congratulations. Oh, honey, I just want to compliment you on what a great season and seasons we had in 2020. You were amazing.
Well, right back at you, honey.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to produce you and be by your side.
Oh, yep. Honey, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Happy New Year to all of you, too. We're so excited to welcome you into our 8th season.
Yep, this is going to be a whopper.
Yeah, it really is.
It's one of my favorite. I think we have some of the best content and stories that I've come across.
Right. Mm-hmm. Today you have Lady Bane.
Yeah, this is such an amazing journey.
Yeah, she is a Black female Detroit police officer.
First of all, to get that story.
Right. Mm-hmm. And injured in the line of duty, and then there is this really unexpected ending to her story.
An amazing transformation.
Yeah.
And just so well told, and this beautiful scene. She sings on it.
Her voice.
It's
ridiculous.
Amazing. Yeah. Good score on that one, honey.
And we've been batching a bunch of really incredible stories for you. We have Danny Shapiro, who's one of my author sheroes, and mm-hmm. she has that monster podcast, Family Secrets.
Yeah, the only one revealing your family secrets.
Right.
I love this.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you've listened to her podcast, you're a fan. If you've read Devotion or any of those other books, you're a fan.
We have Kara Jones, who's the only ex-Mooney in the room.
Right, if who you knows don't, what a Mooney is?
Yeah, if you don't know what a Mooney is, you have to tune into this.
You're probably younger than us if you don't know.
I didn't know, and I was fascinated by it.
Yeah, and then we have one of my absolute favorite authors of all time, Kiese Layman, mm-hmm. whose book Heavy is named by the New York Times one of the 50 best memoirs of the past 50 years.
I mean, that's heavy in itself.
That is heavy, and but we got him.
Yeah, the subject matter is just compelling and deep and really asks you to think a lot. And
yeah.
He's a wonderful interview as well.
Yeah, we have too many to name. We'll have you here all day.
And we really want you to listen to Lady Bane's episode, but we wanted to say thank you and welcome to our eighth season. Thank you for coming along with us.
Yeah, we're excited to keep bringing you guys as much great content as we can.
Yes, and we are looking forward to 2021.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Enjoy the show.
So we are talking to Lady Bane, Cassandra Bane, who I'm going to call Cassandra through the interview. You will know her professionally as Lady Bane. Cassandra, can you tell me what was the first song you ever sang in front of an audience?
Well, the first song I can remember singing was Yes, Jesus Loves Me.
Yes, Jesus Loves Me. And if you've listened to the podcast at all, you know that I'm going to ask you to sing me a few bars of that, please.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I got you. Yes, Jesus loves me. Oh, yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me, for the Bible tells me so.
Woo! Yeah!
Thank you.
How old were you when you sang that? Three or four, you said?
About three or four. I probably sounded more like Mickey Mouse a little bit.
Yeah.
Jesus loves me.
That's great.
I'm sure that all the jaws dropped on the floor.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for that. That was beautiful. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is the only one in the room, but I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Hun. Do you like Cassandra or Cassandra?
You can refer to me as Cassandra. I think that's just fine.
Okay. I would naturally say Cassandra. That's why I wanted to make sure, because I don't like it when people mispronounce my name.
I'll probably call you both.
Yeah, he probably will.
Cassandra, and in, Lady Bane.
In his signature, it says, notorious for getting your name wrong.
It's just a warning to everyone.
So we are talking to Cassandra Bane, professionally known, as I said, as Lady Bane. And Cassandra is a former Detroit police officer who shifted her focus to music after a near-fatal car accident. And we're so excited to be able to share your story with our listeners, Cassandra. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. Well, we are excited to have you for so many reasons. And I just want to start by asking you, how do you identify?
I don't have a specific genre that I like to identify with, but I'm on the charts as R&B and soul.
Okay.
So I do see myself as a true soul artist, which to me can cross over to any genre because right. I sing from my soul and I like to interpret that way.
Okay. Okay. I'll take that. I'm going to take you back a few years. Okay.
Okay.
To the time that you were a Detroit police officer. You worked in the Department of Public Safety. Is that right?
Yes.
But did you also work with the gang squad?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that was like to be a Black woman as a peace officer in the city of Detroit.
Initially, I would say it felt challenging, but after a while, it felt like a calling. It was exhilarating. It was, you know, because it was never a dull moment. Everything can change at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. And I actually looked forward to going to work each day and connecting with people in my community because I still lived in the city. I still had family in the city, and I felt that there was a calling to be a community police officer.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in that line of work, you know, you don't really have time for that. But transitioning to gang squad, which was pretty much dealing with high crimes every day, I still went with the mindset of protecting and serving. And a lot of police work is educating the public as well. So, you know, I just wanted to encase myself in that full role. You know, when I initially signed up, I had this whole perspective of I'm going to be a community police officer. It's going to be waving and just, you know, I'm glad I did have that attitude because I didn't want the day to day life of high crime and all of that good stuff to dull my senses to how people in the community might feel the police really are toward them. So I wanted to be that smiling face. Even on Gang Squad, I wanted to connect with the community. Like, okay, I'm not the judge and jury. I'm just here to affect peace between you and a victim and get you off the streets. And hopefully, you know, from then on, you'll recognize who or what you need to be. So
right.
I just looked at police work as a calling and not as a career.
Got it. Got it. You must have been pretty fit, right? To be a police officer, especially working with Gang Squad.
Yes. Yeah. I enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah. So did you work out? Were you runner? Like what did you do to keep in shape?
I used to run and I enjoyed doing that because I worked with mostly males. So I would put myself in the whole mindset of I'm a woman in uniform, but you can't outrun me. That's right. Not going to happen.
Right. I love it. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
This episode is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Hey, Happy New Year, hun.
Happy New Year.
Here's a riddle for you.
Okay.
What kind of oil locks in moisture and allows entire formulas to penetrate deep into the dermis?
Penetrate deep into the dermis. I have no idea.
I didn't know either, but it's meadow seed oil, which is one of the amazing secret ingredients, not so secret anymore, in Voyage AC's organic shea butter balm. This balm, hun, is amazing, thick and concentrated with shea butter and all these other hydrating oils like neem and sweet almond oil. I slather it on at night and my hands just soak it up.
Yeah, your hands are really soft even after washing and sanitizing them all day long.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why I keep it on the nightstand.
Yep.
Voyage AC has absolutely everything you need. Amazing gifts, faux fur throws, beachwear, diffusers, clutches, beach bags, clothes, gorgeous mix and match gift boxes, and this amazing organic shea butter balm. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all of our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy. Believe me, it adds up.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% back at hundreds of stores, and it's all happening this week, May 6th to May 13th. It's the perfect time to shop for everything on your list for spring and summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. I know I'm using this week to stock up on some warmer weather essentials at Ray-Ban and Ulta, and I love that Rakuten even helps me save on travel at sites like Hotels.com. Rakuten really is the best way to shop, and you can save even more by stacking cash back on top of deals. Plus, during Big Give Week, that cash back is bigger than ever. With Rakuten, membership is free, and when you sign up and shop today, you get an extra 10% cashback boost. That's an extra 10% cashback on top of the 15% cashback. You won't see higher cashback rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Shoppers get it.
Tell me, the year that you were rear-ended, the car accident, what year was that?
That was 2014.
That was 2014. So it was following the death of Eric Garner, right?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
And your city, the city of Detroit, was in turmoil. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that day.
So I remember watching things on the news and just, you know, thinking, okay, this is going to be the norm for a while. But I never in a million years thought that people in my city would want to retaliate against police officers that had nothing to do with policing as a whole, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I never tried to take anything personal because, you know, people are going to do what they want to do. But yeah, that was a rough night.
Well, so what did people do?
They were protesting in the streets and just, you know, as the cars, police cars would roll past, we would get the middle finger. They would honk at us and, you know, hurl expletives at us. And it's just, okay, that's what they do. I'm okay with it.
Right. Were you afraid?
After, you know, I wasn't really afraid. I was disturbed because okay. I'm like, you know, we didn't do it.
Right, right.
You know, you barely hear of any police-involved shootings in the city of Detroit or any wrongful deaths by police officers in this city, so.
Right, and you're on patrol with a partner, right?
Yes.
What race was your partner?
My partner's African-American.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you were two black police officers patrolling the streets and people were still looking at you like you were the enemy.
Yes.
Yeah, that must have been tough, though, right?
It was.
Yeah. So then what happened? Tell me about the accident.
So my partner and I, male partner, he was the driver that night. We got a call to someone breaking into a school. So we were en route to that call and we came off of the freeway and we were stopped at a red light. And just the next thing I knew, my car was spinning and I was in and out of consciousness. And after awakening, not fully coming to, there were people pulling on the doors. And I thought that they were trying to get at us or get our weapons. And
right.
I'm not realizing that there were actually good people out there trying to protect us from the crowd. You
wow.
know?
Wow. Who hit you?
It was a drunk driver, a female, angry lady.
Did she ram you on purpose?
In my heart, I do believe so. Yeah, she tried to flee the scene and the witnesses said the same thing. Like when she got out of the car, she was just not even sorry. She was just like, oh, well, you know.
Wow. Wow. And she was black?
Black lady, black female. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you get out of the car. Do you go right into an ambulance? Are you able to walk? Like what's going on when they get you out?
So the fire department had to get us out and the car was just completely total. It was really the grace of God that we both made it out alive. I do remember they had to carry us by gurney to the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really alert for most of it, but I do remember the ride to the hospital being in and out, just thinking to myself, why? You know, why? And, you know, when you have a heart to help people, you can't imagine someone doing something so vile and vicious toward you,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So what was the prognosis once you got to the hospital and they assessed you? What did you have going on with your body?
So by the grace of God, no visible scars to my face, even though the glass was all in my eyes and ears and
wow.
in my mouth. And I can immediately feel numbness to my lower extremities, severe back pain. And I don't do well with narcotics. So I had to bear under a lot of that pain. To me, that just started the realm of nightmares for me because,
sure.
you know, not being fully conscious, just not able to put everything together and knowing I'm in pain and throwing up the pain med, so I was forced to deal with the emotional part and the physical part immediately.
Right, right. You said your partner was also, he was okay?
Yes, but I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really ask questions because I was really dazed and
mm-hmm.
confused.
Yeah. Did you have to have any surgeries?
Yes. Oh, goodness. Not initially. The first thing in my mind is, okay, I don't want surgery. So I'm going to rehabilitate as naturally as I can. But the pain was just too severe. So the first surgery was a fail. The second surgery was emergency.
Between the accident and the first surgery, how much time it passed?
About maybe 6 months or so.
Oh, wow. Okay. So mm-hmm. you endured for 6 months.
Yes, ma'am.
Were you able to run at all? Were you able to walk?
I had to use a walker, and I was embarrassed to do that. And I don't know if it was just my ego, pride, or whatever. But I'm thinking in my mind, I'm still a police officer. It was like hard to climb down out of that tree.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to do physical therapy. And, you know, I don't want a crutch. I don't want any of this stuff. I just want to get back to being me.
Yeah.
And reality just set in that it wasn't happening.
I want to ask you now about your fiance at the time. Tell me a little bit about him.
So my fiance was a police officer that had gone into the security work. Fit, agile guy, easygoing, very loving. He was very supportive at the time, and I thank God for him.
He was helpful to you.
Very.
Yeah. He took care of you.
He sure did.
And so now you're going into your second surgery because the first one's unsuccessful. This is like a year later, maybe?
So the second one was, let me see, the second one was 2018.
Okay. You're still in Detroit. Are you still thinking that you're going to be able to return to your duties as a police officer at this point?
Absolutely. I was fighting with everything I had.
Okay. And then what happened with the second surgery?
So I just got up one morning and I was going to go to the bathroom and I couldn't feel my body from the waist down. I did have pain leading up to that event, but I'm thinking, okay, we're going to push through this. I'm going to keep it moving. And my body just said, no, you're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
And so did you collapse? Were you able to like get yourself to a place where you could get help?
So I fell to the floor and I called for help. And the next thing I knew, I'm being told that we have to do surgery like right now, or you could okay. be paralyzed.
Right. Yeah. So that's your emergency surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And your fiance's like by your side through that?
So during my first surgery up until 2018, I was experiencing the most traumatic thing that was worse than losing my career. My fiance was diagnosed with early onset dementia.
How old was he then?
He passed away at 53.
At 53? Okay, what age was he when he was diagnosed?
So I would say approximately 49.
Wow, okay.
But it wasn't like a steady decline. It was just, you know, I wasn't accepting it. I guess that's really what it was, you know, because I saw him every day and I'm thinking, I think I was just in denial about the whole scenario.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't hear dementia with someone that young. You're like, oh, no. Okay. He's just having memory problems. It's stress.
Right. Right. And the stress maybe of taking care of you and working. And you have sons, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a family to take care of. And you're going through all this pain, fighting your way to get back to, you know, your uniform, right? So that you can regain your status as a police officer. So by the time you have the second surgery, what's his condition?
So by that time, he was in a nursing home. I could no longer do it. I was his only family. You know, he had living family, but I was basically the only one. You know, we're interracial couple. And so it was just a lot. To paint the picture, it was just a lot. My family's in Florida. So it's just he and I and my boys. And we didn't really reach out for help. You know, I don't know if it's, again, I don't know if it was just pride or denial, but I just wanted the nightmare over. I knew in my heart, John was going to get better. There's no way. This is dementia. There's no way he's going to die, even though I've taken him to every specialist possible. My son was a teenager at the time, and he had to be the driver in the family. He was forced to grow up immediately.
Yeah.
So when I realized that I had to put him in a nursing home, I think that's kind of when everything became real to me.
Yeah.
That this is really happening.
Wow. You mentioned that you were an interracial couple. Do you think that had something to do with the isolation that you guys just had each other? Do you think that was a factor?
I just, I don't, understand how you can have a family member that's terminally ill and you don't come over and check for him. And you know that his fiance was in a near fatal car accident, and I didn't meet his mother until she was on her deathbed.
Wow. Wow.
So yeah. If that's not the case, that's what I was thinking at that time, mm-hmm. you know, and I would hate to misjudge or accuse someone because they probably just had their own thing going on. But that's how I felt then.
Sure. Well, yeah. This is a total sidebar, but I met Scott's father on his deathbed, and I was scared because he had not had a lot of social interaction with Black people prior to that. I didn't know how he was going to respond.
He was paralyzed on his right side and he couldn't speak, but he didn't have to. He fell in love with her immediately.
He did. He did. It was a really beautiful moment, but I was definitely nervous about the whole thing, and I was prepared to not be welcomed. And
yeah, we flew her from LA to Richmond, Virginia, and she was like, it was like a land.
The land of Confederacy.
She had never walked in that light before.
No. So I thought of that right away when you said that. So at this time, he's in a nursing home and you've had your second surgery. I have in my notes, you get medically retired by the department after that. Is that correct?
Yes. And believe it or not, like that was November 26, 2014. And we're still not finished in court with workers' comp.
What?
So we had everything financial. He couldn't work, could not get unemployment because if you're unable to work. So I had to wait for Social Security for him. And so our household was just financially in shambles, you know?
Yeah. And you had these two boys.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what did you do?
So first of all, I'm just make this real clear to anybody who's listening. I relied on faith, and I knew that if God preserved me in that car accident, I was here for a reason. And I knew he was not going to allow me to be homeless. And I had just bought that house actually that March of 2014. So brand new house, no, brand new car, no. You know, my fiance and I set a wedding date for October, you know, so everything was seemingly snatched away that year.
Yeah.
I had to, and I thank God I relied on my savings and, you know, because I dare not ask anybody for a thing because I left home at 17. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like sink or swim, right?
Yeah.
But God just literally provided. Like I didn't have to get food stamps. I didn't have to do anything like that. Just relied on what I had and we ate. We made it.
Wow.
We made it.
That's amazing. But tell me about your state of mind during that. How are you getting around? Are you still on a walker? Are you able to walk? Are you able to run? Like, what's going on with you physically at that time?
So after the first surgery, I was getting weaker and weaker. So I ended up in a wheelchair. And even though John was starting to show signs of his illness, he didn't want anybody else to push me. He would push me, you know, if we had to go somewhere. I had to use a shower chair. I couldn't stand for more than 5 minutes. My state of mind was, this is not Cassandra. Who is this girl I'm looking at in the mirror? Like, you know, from all of the steroids, I gained a ton of weight. So I didn't want to be seen in public because when people see you, you mean you're on Gang Squad, you're fit, you're wearing jump boots. And, you know, to me, you know, I like to play up to my femininity. So I'm like, I want to make sure I'm the prettiest thing out there.
Yeah.
And I just didn't look like myself physically or emotionally. And it was just a person that I did not recognize. But I knew that I had to get Cassandra out of there some kind of way.
Yes. Yes.
You know.
And so you're in this place of despair, right?
Yes.
And the medication, like you said, the pain medications aren't working. Are you still in pain?
I am. But you know what? I meditate now.
Okay.
The doctors didn't tell me that narcotics do not address nerve pain. So
you had nerve pain then.
Absolutely.
And so they were giving you narcotics, but it wouldn't have worked that. It probably just would have gotten you hooked on the opiates then.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
So what did you do at that time? What did you do to get through your days?
I tried every holistic approach. I tried aromatherapy, acupuncture, massage. And it just basically got down to mind over matter. And then I think that's what put me in a position to ignore the signs that my back was getting worse.
Right. And I know there was a point where you were like prepared to die, right?
Absolutely.
And that I think you told me that you had picked out burial clothes. Is that correct?
I sure did.
Oh, my goodness. Tell me about that.
So after I got out of the second surgery, the doctor said, listen, we couldn't fix you. We couldn't even get in there to put in rods and stuff. It was just a mess. So they put me on an MRI machine while my back is still open because they didn't want to close me because they had to ship me off to another hospital. I was just like, okay, I'm done. This is it. Like, okay, I fought as much as I could. I fought through the pain. I didn't get hooked on the drugs. What the heck else am I going to? This is it. So I made it through that little small window. It was like a day before I had the third surgery and having to be like in a rehab center for 10 days with elderly. It was just a whole, it's like a nightmare. But after that, I still got out of the third surgery, which was a day from that emergency surgery.
Right.
And the doctor said, there's no promise that you're ever going to regain full feeling in, you know, in your legs. So I went home and I'm like, talking to my sons, like, okay, this is what I want. This is how I want it. And they're like, what's wrong, mom? So that was in May. Those two surgeries were in May. By December, so this would have been surgery number four. By December, the same thing happened again. Numb from the waist down. I said, okay, I'm out of the game now. This is it.
Yeah.
This is it. So I remember being wheeled onto the floor and the nurse recognized me. She said, Miss Bain, you're back again. Oh my God, I said, yep. And this is it. And she thought that I was saying this is it. Like, okay, I'm not coming back. But in my mind, I didn't want to come back again. So if I'm going under, I don't want to wake up.
Wow.
I can't imagine. And by this time, because my fiance had died that August.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So everything was over for me. Yeah. Everything that I built and loved. My kids were, you know, able to function on their own at this time and called my sister. I told her where my policies were because I made up my mind. I'm not coming out of surgery. There's nothing else to live for.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. And then, so the next thing that I remember from our conversation is that when you did get home, there was a friend of yours who remembered how you sang growing up. Is that correct? Can you tell me about that conversation?
So she had been watching from the background through Facebook and through me reaching out to her here and there. And she had initially even said this to me. She said, why don't you start back singing? And I'm like, and I don't think she knew how bad my condition was because I never like put it out there. I was very private about it. And I laughed. I'm like, No, because to be who I need to be as an artist, this wouldn't work.
Right.
You know, right. When I was in the hospital that December and facing a fourth surgery, wanting to die, praying that I didn't live, I remember just hearing that from her in my head, talking to, because I didn't want people to visit me, talking to my godmother. And she said, God has something for you. You just got to believe it. And I said, okay, if I can walk to that bathroom, I can walk down the hall. So I made myself go walk to the bathroom. I said, okay, I did it. So I walked down the hall and that was on a Wednesday. So by that Friday, I was supposed to have surgery. By that Friday, I was walking up the stairs.
Wow.
And my will to survive, just something just woke up in me. Yes, I was still in pain, but I said, I'm not going out if I don't have to. Uh-huh. When I got home, they let me go that Friday, the day I was supposed to have surgery. I got into the shower to wash the hospital smell off of my body. And I began to sing Pure Love. It just came out of nowhere. So I grabbed my phone and I just began to sing it into my phone. And the whole song, the melody, all of it just flowed through me. And that was confirmation that this is what I was born to do. I'm here.
So this was a song that you were a channel for this song at that time. The song just poured into you and poured out of you. Is that right?
Yes.
The lyrics and the melody?
Yes.
Amazing. Well, I definitely want to hear that. So you have now, you were scheduled for a fourth surgery, but you have willed yourself to walk. You have gotten yourself out of the hospital and you go home, you take the shower. You wash the hospital smell out of your body and something happens and this song comes into you and then out of you and you record it. So what is your mood now that you have had this revelation/revolution? Are you ambitious to continue to record, to sing? Like, what are you thinking you're going to do next at that time?
So getting into the shower, I saw that person that I didn't recognize. When I got out of the shower and I looked in the mirror, I see a whole different person. I see, you know, it's almost like when people use the phrase being born again or being born into your purpose. Mm-hmm. I saw her. I saw her eyes. I saw her smile. I saw her determination and I saw her destiny in that mirror. At that moment, I'm like, okay, there's more in there somewhere.
Right.
Because that came too easily. And I called my friend and I told her, I said, Cece, I'm ready.
Okay. Is this the friend who said that she remembers you singing?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What shout out to her. What's her name?
Her name is Chandra Heath, but we call her Cece.
Okay. Shout out to Cece because that is a beautiful thing that she did.
Yes.
You know, watching your journey. I mean, she was a channel too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you have a song in your heart and on your lips and are you still in pain? I mean, not now, but at that time, were you still in pain?
Yes. A significant amount, but I just, you know, I had something else to focus on and still in emotional pain from losing John
sure.
a few months before.
Sure. Ooh, I mean, that's a lot, girl.
Yeah.
That is a whole lot, but you have a treatment mm-hmm. for your pain, your physical pain and your emotional pain. So what do you do next when that happens? How do you get pure love out into the world?
So after I called Cece, I flew out to Houston and I met my producer, Bass Heavy, and I sang that song for him. And it was almost like watching magic. He caught a few bars of it mm-hmm. and just took off, just did the whole production.
Wow.
It was almost like magic, just getting in that booth and just singing it from a place of experience and love and it was like everything that I had gone through, it was just coming out into that song.
And Bass Heavy produced Juvenile and Mystical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, he's a really big deal. He's from Texas, but he works with artists everywhere. But he's definitely known for like that Texas sound too and yes. helped create it, right? Mm-hmm.
So he's originally from Louisiana. So okay. he's got that, you know, Louisiana
right.
feel to him. He's
right.
so versatile. That's what makes him amazing. You
yes.
know?
Yes.
So church background, yeah. everything. It's just a great cast.
Oh, and I love me some Juvenile.
Yeah.
yeah. And actually, Kiese, when we asked him what song he would bring him out onto the dance floor, he said Mystical. Like Mystical would bring him out onto the dance floor every time. So we have a little intersectionality here.
Ooh.
So did you sign a deal with him?
We signed a production deal.
A production yes. deal. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then did he get your song out?
Yes. He and Cece with Royal Court Records. Cece's actually the CEO of that company. So shout out to a female.
Yes.
Record executive.
Yes. Double shout out to Cece. Okay.
Yes.
And then what did it do after you put it out into the world?
Oh, wow. You know what? Things happened so fast that I couldn't catch up with everything. We started doing interviews and getting awards and recognition overseas, charting in Italy, the UK. It was just almost like in magazine covers.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. And I said, wow, this is really happening. This is really going on here, you know?
Right. At this point, which is almost at the point we're at now, but are you able to perform? You're not in a wheelchair anymore. Were you still using a walker?
You know what? No, like I'm going to tell you, this is what made it so beautiful. When I would feel myself needing a push or needing a crutch or needing, I'm just thinking mind over matter. Yes, it hurts. But when I'm in my safe place, like I said, I tried meditation before. That did work to some degree. And I believe that's what kept me from, you know, really going under. But I think just my fight and my determination mm-hmm. to get my gift out to the world. It's like, this is what I'm here for. And I'm going to fight whether it hurts, whether it costs me my life at this point, because this is my purpose.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm still a little stuck on the fact that you had an MRI with your back open. from the surgery. Like, Scott just had an MRI and he had a terrible experience getting it. It was traumatic emotionally and mentally for him. And his back was closed. he did not have an open back.
I just didn't see it coming. I never thought it to be an issue, but I just can't imagine the situation you were in.
No.
It's not comfortable. At you know, whatever percentage I was at, I wasn't comfortable, but in the middle of an open surgery.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm like, do I have to lay on my back to get this done?
Right?
They're like, yes, you got to be still.
I know, right?
Oh, the worst. I don't know how you did that, honestly.
It's almost like an archaic, like they lock you in these.
Mm-hmm. Like a chamber
it's
or something.
Crazy,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So are you doing a new album? You have a new album that's coming out?
Yes, and the name of it is Limitless. So it embodies a lot about me. The title track does. I actually cried while writing that. So that's coming out March 20th, 2021.
Awesome.
So I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So when people are listening to this, it'll just be like a couple months away, which is really cool. Yeah. You'll be able to go out and buy this Limitless album by Lady Bane. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you want to talk about at all?
Well, I do have a Christmas single that's coming out Thanksgiving Day.
Okay. Okay. What's that called?
It's Unwrap Me. It's a little sultry for us grown people.
Do you say it's sultry?
Yes.
Unwrap
Me. But it does have like a little family appeal to it as well.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Kind of like Santa Baby?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Anything else about your journey that I might have skipped over or you could have talked about more?
Well, there's always a little bit more, but I just want to, you know, make the fact really relevant to your listeners that, you know, when you're at a point in your life where you feel like there's nothing else to give, give whatever you can, fight however you can, because you're still here for a reason. Mm. And sometimes it takes tragedy to lead you to triumph. So just don't give up, you know, rely on whatever you have inside of you and keep pushing, you know.
Well, you are evidence of that. You are absolutely evidence of that. You know, I'm going to ask you to sing me some Pure Love, but before you do, can you tell me where people can find you?
Yes, you can find me across social media at Lady Bane Music. That's B-A-I-N. A lot of people think bang, like
right.
a gun, like
right.
bang.
Yes. No, yeah. It's not that. It's not that. Although it could have been, but
right.
No, it's B-A, Lady B as in boy, A-I-N as in Nancy, music, right?
Yes, Lady Bane Music.
Great.
And I would love to connect with your listeners there. Also, I had a chance to be in a film, Colorblind, that's coming out. Yes, next spring. And it's just a lot of things that kind of just rolled off from the music career and winning awards. I won Best Female Artist of the Year, Best Song of the Year with Pure Love, nominated in several other categories. Those results are pending. Some, you know, major doors have opened up, major connections. And so we're definitely pushing forward. And I just would love to continue to give what I got to the world. Let's see. I have a beautiful team with World Court Records. My creative director, Ms. Coco Valentine, film director, Timothy Irvin Jr. And it's like all hands on deck. Everybody, I just wanted to, you know, send a
you
shout
want
a out
shout
to
out
them.
To them. Sure. Sure. Of course.
Yeah. For just being there, you know.
You've had another single. Don't say the name of it, but you've had another single besides Pure Love out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. Don't say the name. So I'm issuing a challenge to our listeners to find me the name of Lady Bang's second single. I said Lady Bang.
You did. I heard that. Don't go looking
goodness.
For Lady Bang's
Don't
second
look for
single.
Lady Bang.
We need to find Lady Bang's second single.
Lady Bang's second single, the one after Pure Love. And if you find it, the first person that brings it back to me on social media, you know, you need to hit us up on The Only One in the Room, DM me. Or post it, and I will send you some Only One in the Room merchandise.
So, aha, look at that.
So find that second single and hit me up, hit us up on The Only One in the Room, and you will get some merchandise for your efforts. Okay? And now, would you do me the honor or do us the honor of blessing us with a little Pure Love as we go out?
Absolutely. It's my honor. You're feeding my addiction. You took away the cure. Boy, you made me love you. What can a girl endure? I done messed around and fell for you. I done messed around and cut this thing for sure. Talking about pure love unchaste. Talking about pure love straight to my veins.
Ooh, yes. Yes.
Thank you so much.
I see you. Why Bass Heavy fell in love with that. Wow. You are so talented. And your story is so incredibly inspiring.
It is. My God.
I feel very fortunate that Scott and I get to bring your story out into the world. And I know that people who are feeling like they can't go on will hear this and decide that maybe they have another day and go on one more day. And maybe they'll listen to your music while they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Good vibes to you.
The Only One in the Room has brand new interviews for you every week. You won't want to miss our full episodes every Tuesday, Scott Talks on Wednesday, and our new Thursday series, The Now Normal. And twice per month, be sure to catch our 30-minute Sunday edition by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Join our Only One in the Room Facebook group if you'd like to tell us about your Only One story. All of us at The Only One in the Room wish you safety and wellness.
Hi, my name is Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo.
And together, we run Buffering, a rewatch adventure, a family of podcasts moving through our favorite 90s genre television.
If you're a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, well, great news for you. Our very first podcast adventure took us through all 7 seasons of the series. We covered it spoiler-free, episode by episode. For those of you who want to start the show for the first time, you can find that podcast pretty easily. It's called Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Inside that podcast, you'll also find an original song that pairs with each glorious episode of Buffy, and original character jingles for so many of our Buffy favorites.
Buffering has been praised in places like Time, Esquire, Paste Magazine, and the New York Times, and we've chatted with dozens of cast members, writers, directors, and fans along the way. Come hang out and rewatch some of your favorite television with us and a wonderful community of listeners.
Learn more at BufferingCast.com or find us on socials at BufferingCast.